With What's News, I'm Charlie Turner for The Wall Street Journal in New York. President Trump's new trade agreement is different from the NAFTA Accord, but not by as much as the White House might have you think. We'll talk with The Wall Street Journal's Greg Ipp in a moment. First, here are some top news headlines. The Wall Street Journal says Democrats will seek a firsthand look at President Trump's tax returns if they take control of the House or Senate after next month's elections. That's according to the key lawmakers who would gain the authority to get the documents. Democrats say the president's tax returns are an essential part of exploring Mr. Trump's ties to Russian interests, any tax avoidance strategies he used, and potential benefits from the 2017 tax law he signed. Several lawmakers renewed their calls for the returns after the New York Times reported Tuesday on alleged estate and gift tax avoidance by Mr. Trump and his father. The administration has turned aside the Democrats' requests, and a legal battle is possible if the party takes control of either House of Congress. eBay is accusing Amazon.com sales reps of trying to poach sellers for its own marketplace through eBay's messaging system. eBay sent a cease and desist letter to Amazon on Monday to stop the alleged recruiting practice after determining roughly 50 Amazon sales representatives worldwide sent more than 1,000 messages to sellers on its platform, according to the letter, which was viewed by the Wall Street Journal. eBay reportedly investigated the matter after a seller alerted the company about 10 days ago of someone using the messaging system on eBay's site to convince this seller to move to Amazon. The Wall Street Journal says the average cost of health coverage offered by employers rose to nearly $20,000 for a family plan this year, capping years of increases that experts said are tied to rising prices paid for health care. Annual premiums rose 5% to $19,616 for an employer family plan in 2018, according to the yearly poll of employers by the nonprofit Kaiser Family Foundation. Employers also continued to boost the deductibles that workers must pay out of their pockets to help blunt the premium increases. Still ahead, how the new trade deal shows the limits of President Trump's protectionist tendencies. You're listening to What's News from the Wall Street Journal. As a candidate, Donald Trump threatened to rip apart trade deals, including the North American Free Trade Agreement, and as president, continued to call NAFTA the worst trade deal ever. But how does the new trade accord, the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement, differ from or improve upon NAFTA? In the end, not by very much, according to the Wall Street Journal's Greg Ipp. Greg is the journal's chief economics commentator and joins us from Washington. Greg, we know that President Trump is a protectionist who saw NAFTA, a three-way trade agreement with Mexico and Canada, as a bad deal for the U.S. But you say that this so-called USMCA deal shows the limits of Trump's putting America first stance. How so?
You have to kind of look at what Trump has been talking about, which is essentially like tearing up these trade agreements and getting rid of trade deficits and so on. But in the end, he has settled for a new NAFTA, which only makes minor concessions relative to the old one. Mexico basically accepts some more conditions on car exports. Canada will allow more imports of dairy products and so forth. And you have to ask, well, why is this? After all this Sturm und Drang, why did Trump settle for such minor improvements? And I think one of the reasons why is that he encountered so much resistance everywhere in the United States to a much more dramatic severing of ties with U.S. trade partners. Congress didn't want him to do it. Business didn't want him to do it. Canada and Mexico actually put up a pretty vigorous fight, made it clear they weren't going to settle for anything. And what I think this demonstrates is that the kind of the rules-based trading order that Trump has set out to try and disrupt may be a little bit more resilient than we'd realized.
Well, in Canada's case, Greg, weren't some of the concessions that Canada made parts of previous agreements, in other words, things that they had already signed on to?
Yes. So Canada went into this agreement saying it has to be win-win for both countries. Now, Canada might be disappointed that it didn't get much out of the United States, but really, the test for Canada was how much can we avoid losing, given that this is a president who is determined to extract something out of us. And Canada had a few red lines. One of those red lines was protection for Canadian cultural industries. And another was preservation of these binational panels, which are allowed to overrule the U.S. if it imposes an anti-dumping or a countervailing countervailing duty that are considered unfair. And Canada got to keep both those things. The one place it made a concession was on dairy. Canada has a highly protected dairy market and only allows very small amounts of imports. It agreed to expand the amount of imports it'll take from the United States. So that's a genuine concession, but I will add it's actually one that's good for Canadian consumers as well. But I would also point out that Canada was probably ready to make some kind of a concession on dairy right from the start, simply because they already had in prior trade agreements with Europe and with the other members of the Trans-Pacific Partnership.
What about the future, Greg? You write that the outcome has important lessons for future trade negotiations. President Trump will soon be negotiating with Japan and the EU over steel and autos.
What I think this proves is that other countries are not necessarily going to be beaten black and blue by the very tough U.S. negotiating stance. The fact of the matter is that Trump is more or less an outlier in the United States. He alone feels that the United States is being ripped off right, left, and center by its own allies on trade. His party doesn't agree with him. Democrats, by and large, don't agree with him. Business certainly doesn't agree with him. And he has discovered that the U.S., that notwithstanding all the leverage the U.S. has, other countries are not just going to roll over and do whatever he wants them to do. They're going to put up a fight, and they can walk away from a deal, and they can retaliate and impose tariffs on the United States as well. All of this presents real-life constraints on his ability to impose his will on the rest of the world.
Greg, this new trade deal must get congressional approval to become law. Might the USMCA go down to defeat if businesses, especially exporters, pressure lawmakers not to support the deal?
You're not going to see businesses pressuring lawmakers not to support the deal. I think U.S. businesses are relieved that the deal that came out in the end is so similar to the old one. Where you might have some problems, I think, is with Democrats. By and large, they're still the more protectionist of the two parties. They want a lot for labor rights, for environmental protection. They're going to scrutinize this deal very strongly. And they're not necessarily in a mood to hand President Trump any victories. So if Democrats do take the House of Representatives in the midterm elections, that could produce some complicating dynamics for passage of the deal. If Trump wants this thing to pass, he may have to do what other presidents have done and basically cobble together a coalition of Republicans and Democrats, which would be kind of ironic because you'd end up having Trump using the bully pulpit of the presidency to extol the virtues of a free trade agreement, exactly the kind of agreement he's been disparaging for the last 2 years.
Wall Street Journal chief economics commentator Greg Yip joining us from Washington. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thank you.
And that's What's News. I'm Charlie Turner from The Wall Street Journal.